Hello, welcome to the latest edition of the Fertility Answers podcast. I'm your host, Neil Chappell, and excited to bring another COVID-conscious episode to your feed. I really started this project to be able to bring patients into the space and have a scientifically backed conversation about difficult choices to find answers that hopefully help people with forks in the road. And then COVID struck just when I was starting to understand how to cut, paste, and record myself on the microphone. So here I am trying to be responsible with COVID, with the podcast that I've recorded either by myself or with some other colleagues. And in that spirit, I have brought Hillary Janani, one of the genetics counselors and colleagues and confidants for me that I reach out to, if not weekly, at least several times a month, for some interesting genetic questions in patients that come up in practice. And so I thought today would be a good time to talk about carrier screen. It's something that we talk about in the fertility world with every new patient that crosses the door, but it's not something that people talk about much before talking to a fertility doc. So I thought this would be a good opportunity to just have that background explained in better detail so that you could be a little bit more prepared whenever going down this particular rabbit hole. So, Hillary, thanks for joining, and I really appreciate your time and looking forward to kind of hearing your thoughts. First of all, I guess let's just talk about what a carrier screen is. What is it? Why do we do it? What does it mean?
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. So carrier screen is it's a way to determine whether an individual carries what we call a recessive genetic condition. And people who are carriers of recessive conditions typically aren't affected themselves. They don't have symptoms. They probably have no idea that they even are a carrier. But they have. There's a chance that they could have offspring affected with that condition if their partner also happens to carry the same condition. So carrier screening can give more information as to whether there is any reproductive risk of that couple having a child affected with a certain recessive condition.
Cool. That's perfect. And I think the highlights are that sometimes you can just carry a mutation. What I tell folks is you get a copy of DNA from your mom and a copy of DNA from your dad. And sometimes one of those copies has a mutation. You have no idea, but we're all human. So we got a mistake here and there. And the problem arises is if you carry the same bad copy that your partner carries, because you can pass two bad copies onto the offspring. And so
exactly.
There are so many different ways you can inherit DNA. There's autosomal dominant, autosomal recessive, and then a bunch of other more complicated stuff. So this looking just for those recessive mutations to make sure that there's nothing hidden, I think is really the key. Patients commonly ask, well, there's no family. I don't have any mm-hmm. family history of things. Why mm-hmm. would I even do this? And these can remain hidden for generations in patients. I think that's important. So I think when we think about what a carrier screen is and what a carrier screen isn't, I always talk about to my patients, this is not looking for a problem with you. It's looking for, is there a potential problem that your offspring are at more of a risk for than someone else?
Or a
different couple. So, you know, as a follow-up to that, and you're welcome to add any more to that than what I just said, but do you think that one person should be tested or both people, both partners? Because that's a question that I actually often struggle with myself.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on several things. One is, what are the circumstances? Are they trying to get pregnant? Are they trying to get pregnant right away? Are there other timing concerns? And if so, then you can, you know, screen them both at the same time. Generally, we start by testing the woman, mm-hmm. Do a big panel on her, see if she is positive for anything, then if she is, test the partner. But in certain populations, like, for example, people with Ashkenazi Jewish ancestry have much higher rates of carrying certain things like Tay-Sachs disease. So if you have a couple where they're both Ashkenazi Jewish, you might want to go ahead and just proceed with testing both at the same time. So that might be kind of a special circumstance. But in general, we usually start with the woman and then move forward with the man.
I find I do that as well, simply from a logistics standpoint, that it's really often more difficult to get the male partner to be tested.
And cost-wise, I think a lot of labs have it to where if the female tests positive, then you can screen the partner for that mutation sometimes for free, or at least for a reduced cost.
Okay.
So that sometimes can bring it down rather than just ordering a full panel on both of them.
That's a good point. Okay. Yeah. So if you're in a hurry and you need to know whether or not they carry, save testing time by testing them both.
Right.
Or if they are at both a higher risk than general population, such as, like you said, Ashkenazi Jew, yes, or actually Cajun descent, they have a higher risk for Tay-Sachs.
Yeah.
Maybe consider screening them both just because they are both at a higher risk. Yeah. That's perfect.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Tay-Sachs, and I'm not sure how many of our viewers have heard of that disease. And there's several hundred diseases that many people haven't heard of. And I think that brings up two good points. Number one, should we be looking for all of these diseases that we can test for? Would you recommend kind of a more focused approach? And number two, what happens if you turn out to be positive for Fanconi's anemia, or something that most folks have never even considered Wikipediaing?
Yeah. Well, those are good questions. So I think that there are these more focused panels, smaller panels. So I think the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, or what we call ACOG, they recommend that any women who are pregnant or who are considering pregnancy be screened for at least cystic fibrosis, which some people have heard of, spinal muscular atrophy, which I think probably most people have not, and then Fragile X syndrome. Also, certain hemoglobinopathies, so like sickle cell disease. Those are the four main ones that ACOG recommends all women be screened for, because they are there's much higher carrier rates for those. So for example, 1 in 35 Caucasians is a carrier of cystic fibrosis. Somewhere between 1 in 40, 1 in 60 is a carrier of spinal muscular atrophy. So like you mentioned earlier, these people may have absolutely no family history, but there's a decent chance that, you know, one person in a crowded room is gonna be a carrier of cystic fibrosis, for example. It kind of depends on the doctor. It may depend on the geneticist of how big of a panel to start with. But I would think that most couples, if not all couples, should consider screening for at least those three, the cystic fibrosis, spinal muscular atrophy, Fragile X. And then people with African American ancestry, their carrier rate for sickle cell, of course, is very high, about 1 in 10.
Mm-hmm.
So we should be screening them for that. And then, like you mentioned, Ashkenazi Jewish, Cajuns, French Canadians should... We generally recommend, ACOG recommends, doing a more expanded panel on them to include things like Tay-Sachs or Canavan disease or a bunch of other conditions that probably most people have never heard of and never will. So those people should consider maybe a bigger panel. But the thing is that a lot of these panels, a lot of the labs these days are pushing these panels with dozens, if not hundreds, of genes and conditions. And it's kind of, is that necessary or not? What's important to keep in mind is most of us probably carry some very rare recessive condition or another. So the more genes that you test, the higher the likelihood that you're going to screen positive.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, only about 1% of couples end up being at risk, i.e. where both partners carry the condition.
That's 1 in 100. That's not a small number when you think about the number of couples that are out there.
That's true. So I think pre-test counseling is important, because we used to order these big panels, and when the woman would come back positive as a carrier, she'd be, you know, really freaked out. Oh my gosh, what does this mean? Do I have this? Are kids going to be affected? And so it's important to let them know up front that there's a decent chance that at least one of the partners will show up positive for a mutation. But first of all, it doesn't mean that you have that condition in almost all cases. Secondly, the chances that the partner is going to carry the exact same condition is usually very, very low. So I think just having patients know that going in, that there's a decent chance that they'll screen positive, but not to necessarily be alarmed about it, and let's move forward to the next step of testing the partner.
Yeah, that's perfect. I think that really does a service to the patient to be thinking about those kind of things while you're waiting for the results to come in, so it's not a shock when you do test positive for some random thing. No, you don't have the disease.
Right.
Another thing that you kind of touched on that I think is important to consider from a pragmatic standpoint, when we talk about, besides just those four that ACOG and ACMG recommend, is the pragmatics of it. It's gotten so that we can do so much high throughput sequencing.
Mm-hmm.
It's honestly so easy to test for a number of diseases that the cost isn't very variable. And so many people are pushing, hey, we know that the incidence of these mutations is rare, but it costs the same to do it. Just do the expanded carrier panel and rest easy that you've further reduced your risk. And that, while more testing isn't always better in the medical world, it's somewhat practical and pragmatic to think about it from that standpoint. If it's not added cost and not really added time, then a little bit more information is maybe not a bad thing.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you taking a second to talk about the importance of not freaking out with a quote-unquote positive result.
Right.
It's just now we have to talk about what we need to do with the partner, if anything.
Right, right. So another thing that's important is making sure that whoever's ordering the testing is experienced with the results and isn't giving incorrect information. So along that thread, and I think which was what part two of your previous question is, what to do if you're positive. So if the woman screens, or whatever, first partner screens positive, test the other partner. If they're both positive, then we do usually recommend genetic counseling to discuss more in detail. Okay, what does it mean that you both screen positive? What are the chances that you would have an affected pregnancy, which in almost all of the cases with these recessive conditions is a 25% chance, or a 1 in 4 chance that each pregnancy would be affected.
Mm-hmm.
A big thing to talk about is, what does that condition look like? So what are the symptoms of it? What would it be like to have a child with that? Are there treatments available? What's the management look like? So that the couple can make an informed decision about, is this something that they, you know, are comfortable with those odds of having a child that's affected? Do they have the resources they would, you know, need to take care of a child with that condition? Is this something that they would prefer to try not to pass along to future generations? Then, of course, that's where we would obviously send them back to REI and talk about the pre-implantation genetic diagnosis and all, you know, that side of things.
Yeah, that dovetails nicely into the whole question of, why do I even care? Why do I have this conversation with every patient that comes through the door? And the answer is because now we have the technology available to look at the cells in the placenta and do the pre-implantation genetic testing. Often when we talk about pre-implantation genetic testing, or PGT, we talk about screening for what's called aneuploidy, which I've spoken about before on the podcast, but is essentially just making sure that the embryo has all the right textbooks and blueprints to grow into a healthy, happy pregnancy. And that's a very summarized synopsis of what PGT for aneuploidy is, or PGTA. But we can also do the genetic testing for these single gene mutations, and we call that monogenic disorders, or PGTM. And that's really the crux of why we care to even have this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
On the reproductive endocrine side, yes, I think that it is important, and ACOG recommends, and ACMG also recommends, at least understanding your baseline risk, and like you kind of pointed to, having someone talk to you about baseline risk and ramifications if you were to both screen positive for the same disorder. But on the RE side, it's a completely different and nuanced conversation about what to do about both screening positive.
Mm-hmm.
And one that I have not every month, but several times a year. And we're always very glad to have that pause to say, hey, this is an important thing that we really need to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to screen the embryos to make sure they're not affected with some lethal disorder prior to pregnancy, because these are typically pregnancies we work pretty hard for.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So yeah, I think that's a really nice point. You are extremely good at keeping me on track and not letting me go down a rabbit hole, because I've covered a lot of what I wanted to talk about. What else am I missing as far as what patients need to know about carrier screens?
Well, one thing is that carrier screening, like with most genetic testing, it often has implications not only for the patient or for her partner, but for the rest of the family. So one thing we would talk about with genetic counseling is, if a woman screens positive, or even if like just one person screens positive in the couple but the other person doesn't, we're going to talk to that person about the fact that their relatives also have a certain chance that they carry that same condition. So if you have a 20-something-year-old woman who's considering pregnancy and she has 3 siblings and she screens positive for a cystic fibrosis carrier, then we know that her siblings have a chance they carry it as well, and if they're of reproductive age, they may want to consider screening for that so that they know what the chances are that they could have affected children. So that's another thing that we go into with genetic counseling, is talking about how can this extend out further into the family, and what other people should be aware of this information.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And honestly, that's not one that we probably talk as much, or as much as we should, with our patients. We kind of stop with, this is what this means for you. But we probably should do a better job of saying, make sure that you're talking to your family too about looking into this. Well, I think everyone out there can see why I talk to you so much. about what patients and stuff come our way. I'm really grateful. This has been an awesome talk, and I think I took some stuff away to kind of highlight in my practice, and I hope that this answers a few questions and possibly gives y'all a little bit of foundation and background at home to bring to your docs whenever you're looking at your options and choices. But really, thank you, Hillary, and
thank
look
so
forward
much.
To thinking of another topic to bring you back in for.
Thank you so much. Appreciate
right.
it.
Guys, this was another Fertility Answers episode. If you've got thoughts, questions, you can email us at podcast@fertilityanswers.com. But until then, I hope y'all have a great day, and